So I don't know if you've noticed, but Venus is at 21 Aries right now, which is the gateway to the garden of all desired things, and Pluto is at 21 Capricorn. And we go, anybody know anybody with planets at 21 degrees? Me! Right. My Sun and Neptune are 21 Libra. Woohoo! So may we be agents of this. So, oh, fellow pragmatic mystics, what a great time to gather. And I love to begin everything with Muti. Muti comes from the South African Sangomas, the medicine people. Muti means power and medicine, reminding us that true power is that which heals. We don't source power, we invite it. With acts of dedication, like this beautiful conference, thank you, Laura and the team, and we're really pretty good, and what a great time to gather. So we say, O spirit of the compassionate trickster, residing in each one of us, you know, open the path before everyone, that we may cultivate, animate, and contribute our considerable gifts to the world in a manner that is replenishing and serious fun at this time of dire beauty. There we go. So they also gave me some umpepu, which I have mixed with coyote hair because everything in my life is mixed with coyote hair. And umpehu opens the channels between the living and the dead. So we got between the visible and the invisible. And if we think about it, you know, the inviting in of power, you know, what's been going on, you know, the solstices and equinoxes and whatnot, you know, oh, literal and symbolic light of sun, come on in and illuminate this writing, this painting at the back of the cave. This is the story we want to animate. So it's great to gather now to go, what is the story we want to animate that's desirable? But I have up here a picture of the creature, the living being, or ancestor now, but that I've lived longer with a coyote than I've lived with a human. It's kind of, I don't go, oh no, or terrible. It's kind of like a Chinese fairy tale. But here's Stella Coyote. I lived with her from when she was 6 weeks to when she died in June at the age of 19 years, 2 months and 2 weeks. We had a really great run. But there she is on the stove and going, why are you taking my picture instead of shooing me off? Because that was one of our ongoing jokes. There are very few rules in this house, but no coyotes on the stove is one of them. So we learned a lot from each other, and I want to tease it into pertinence because it is trickster medicine, and it is a kind of wheel and deal. You know, we've taught dogs shame, but coyotes zero shame, only how can I get away with this? But also, you know, also telepathic wheel and deal. When she first came to my life and it was irresistible, I know it would be daunting because when I went to pick her up at the age of 6 weeks, because it was a woman who was rehabbing a coyote against its will that got it on with her little miniature Eskimo Spitz, probably with ladders and yoga. But anyway, they had these beings, and you can see how much the wild predominates. So she was a between worlds being. You know, there was a dog mind in there somewhere, but really mostly coyote. And the backstage to coyote was so great because, as destructive as she was, you know, dogs know shame and also obedience and whatnot. Coyotes zero. And at the same time, I had when I got her, I had a wolf hybrid, Captain Moondog Wolfie. So I know these wolves and coyote culture pretty well, and they will be pertinent to our conversing in a moment. But I couldn't have raised Stella without Captain Moondog. But wolves, very different. Moondog Wolfie would go, I see by the symbolism of the fence, even though I could leap it, that you would like me to stay in here. Stella Coyote would go, a door would be useful for me here, and she would bite her way through the wall and make a door. And when I first got her, every night at 2 a.m., she would gather things from around the house, you know, underwear, menstrual pads, art, you know, and make a circle around them, and then she would throw everything up in the air, animate it, and bite it, and then she'd run around and bite me and the wolf dog, and we were like, and the wolf dog was like, what have you done? What have you done? I'll sleep outside in the rain. You know, but then, so I put my little forehead to hers, because she really liked that, and I go, I can see you're a great artist, and here's the deal. Okay, this is all wheel and deal. Here's the deal. I will keep you supplied with art supplies, right? And you have Moondog Wolfie that she loved more than anything. And you got guaranteed safety, right? And you're giving up some freedom. But this is our deal. So you don't need to do this biting us at 2 a.m. thing. Well, and so she never did. She did many other horrible things, but she didn't do that. She didn't do that thing. But again, very often with trickster and coyote, admiration trumped aggravation. She lifted a, I saw her once lift a bucket of water out of the bathtub where it'd been, you know, catching stuff, and pour it on the carpet and then lie down and go, coyote air conditioning. And I go, that is so impressive. That is so impressive. But I also have just a video. Can we line up the video of her adorable self? This is her, age 17. So wait for just one second here, because when Moondog Wolfie died, it was her best friend in the world, and she grieved, but she was not sentimental. She taught me the difference between grief and sentimentality. You know, and even when he was dying, she was like, I love you more than life itself, but you're dying and I'm going to eat your food. You know, and so the way in which, again, the grief versus sentimentality, we want to honor this idea of the real thing, the authentic thing, the tonic thing, and then the toxic mimic. And we might say, you know, sentimentality is the toxic mimic of grief. But when Moondog Wolfie died, I had to replace him by us playing hide and seek. And here's a little short clip of Stella at the age of 17. And this is me saying, where'd she go? Where'd she go? Where'd she go? Oh, where'd she go? Oh my goodness. We're all wondering where she went. Whoop. Uh-oh, can't really see it. Okay, well, you get the gist of it. Oh well. There was a lot of wit. I mean, she would hide and then leap out at things. And oh, there we go, kind of go, okay. And then she's off, she goes, there we go. Backstage, okay. That's absolutely good enough for mythological work. So one of the things is, because I've lived with part wolf and part coyote, half coyote, wolves very Saturn. Okay, I love the wolf model of leadership, which is a friend explained to me, and I learned wolves don't operate on dominance; they operate on charisma. And in wolf culture, charisma means who initiates play best. Not just let's go hunting, but play is really the top of the criterion. And you can tell the alpha wolf within 10 days of birth because it's the wolf pup with the lowest resting heartbeat, right? So it's the coolest, calmest wolf who engages the playful ingenuity of the pack. And we go, that would be a really good model for leadership. We want to, because we're here backstage designing the desirable world in the memosphere, and then at a certain point we're going to pull the switch on the reality train and have the desirable world pour into what passes for reality at the moment. So... But wolves, everybody's got a job. It's a pack, you know, with a great structure. So coyotes, no. Coyotes much more mad, genius, crazy, wild. But what's happening now is wolves and coyotes are mating. Scientists call them coy wolves. I call them wolfotes. And so the evolutionary advantage, and I want to, as Saturn and Uranus have been trined in fire, and then this year they'll be trined in earth. You know, it's a model. May all of our aspirations be guided from, you know, humbly observing the genius of nature. So the evolutionary advantage of the wolfotes is, think of what we want, to have the support of a wolf pack, you know, and to contribute to a wolf pack that encourages everyone's mad, crazy, wild, genius coyote, right? So to have safe enough to take the interesting risks, right? And that's kind of the Aquarius community dynamic. How much structure, how much improv? And because Saturn and Uranus, you know, trine in fire and then in earth this year, you know, think of it even in just physical terms. You know, it's like a threshold. And when we stand before a threshold, we're double weighted. Okay, both feet are Saturn. And then we shift the weight to one foot. So one foot is Saturn and the other foot is liberated Uranus, right? And we swing the liberated foot across the threshold, feel for sturdy purchase, right? And then when we've got that, we transfer the weight. That becomes the Saturn foot, the other foot, the Uranus, and we swing it through, and we're through the doorway. There we go. So I like thinking that all gods and goddesses are metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. Just something to play with. So here we are, this new moon, right, on St. Patrick's Day at 26 plus Pisces. The Sabian for that is a vision of peace, right before the vernal equinox. You know, and what would humans do with such a thing, you know, for millennia, tens of millennia? You know, this would be the time, remember the vernal equinox, Persian New Year, lambing, you know, woofiness, the green fire, what would we protect? You know, and it's also, let us remember that it's the day that George W. Bush began bombing Iraq, on that very day, sacred to new life. It reminds us, it behooves us to animate the metaphors and the sort of sky-earth story being so generously proffered to us, lest we leave it by default to the Dementors of Doom, you know? And so I love that the mythological and symbolic are completely intertwined. And just a little reference also to Coyote Network News and the value of being surprising. There is no prison for the unexpected, right? And so I do cross borders. I went to both conventions as Astrological Mythological Press and reported back from there. It's a whole other thing. Beneath everyone's chair is an invisible magic backpack with treats you get to take away and play with. And one is the all-important Harumphitude composter, right? Because effective communication only happens when we have composted Harumphitude. So I went to CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Conference. I've been twice, and it's the den of underworld, you know, toxicity, just to see if there are any, you know, allies there. And there are. I didn't go this year, though. I saw... You know, at one point I saw these Ayn Rand Austrian economists, you know, and they were even following a guy, you know, stooped over with a black eye patch, and it's like, God, it's like a cartoon, it's like a Batman villain. And I had some Harumphitude, right? I was like, huh. You know, it's like, no, compost the Harumphitude. And they sort of strode over to me, because I look like how I look, and they said, you, who are you? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And they said, that is so cool, right? So, and then we had a conversation. See, if I'd said I'm an environmentalist, feminist, or even astrologer, you know, again, it's good to be surprising because then we were into defining terms, so that was useful. So the mythological and the symbolic literacy, you know, I love that Stephen Hawking, you know, his whole life he was touting, he loved that he was born on the 300th anniversary of the death of Galileo. You know, and he died on Einstein's birthday, which is Pi Day, 3.14. So we love that. So the secular and the mythological interweaving. But let's go back just briefly to that new moon on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, which happens also to be Stormy Daniels' birthday. Quite pertinent. You know, and so there's a wonderful tale that's told about St. Patrick that he's invited to a initiatory dinner, and he's given a cup of poisoned wine. I happen to have one here. And so what he does, okay, so he doesn't drink it and die, which would be very martyr-y. You know, better a trickster than a martyr, it says. So he doesn't, nor does he throw it on the ground and in a peak of tantrum yoga. No, what he does is he holds the poisoned wine up to the light, the poison rises to the top, he blows it off like froth on a Guinness, and he quaffs the drink. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Toasting everyone, including those who tried to poison him, causing the elders to go, a real initiate. Now, I love this tale because St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, right before the vernal equinox, kind of puts him as a, you know, a kind of vernal hero. And it would say, you know, we've all been given a poisoned cup of wine. One, it's the end of winter and we're detoxing, but we've all been given a cup of poisoned wine. And this is the kind of trickster dynamic, hold it up to the light, poison rises up, blow it off, and toast everyone. You know, and that idea right now is we're here dedicated pragmatic mystics, and we've been given from our mentors and ancestors so many liberating keys, right? And so now let's put them in the lock and turn them. Let's experiment. You know, let's that sane, reverent common sense could assume cultural narrative lead. And this, you know, the idea of us also all being influential, a word that comes from astrology, influence, you know, is I think it's time to experiment. And I mean, trickster runs through everything, but I do associate a lot with Uranus, you know, and so it is this kind of trickster dynamic that we'll get to. But let me stay with Stormy Daniels for a moment. A fantastic chart, Grand Trine in Water. She's got Sun 26 plus Pisces, Vision of Peace. You know, trines Uranus in Scorpio, with the Moon in Scorpio. Trines Jupiter, exalted in Cancer, trines back. And I love, you know, I so trust this language as we do, going Jupiter, stories and blessing, exalted in Cancer, providing nourishment. There's a wonderful phrase in the Arabian Nights that says, people need stories more than they need bread. And I go, there we go. But I also love that the Cancer glyph really is, you know, it's bosoms, right? And Jupiter in Cancer, you know, in the solar chart, you know, that's the first thing you know about Stormy Daniels is she has very Jupiterian bosoms, like, hello. So it's all kind of literal. So we have the March 24th, we want to cover tomorrow, the March for Our Lives, the remarkable Parkland youth. You know, all, you know, so a lot of them, 17 turning 18, so we're looking back to the year 2000, which was the Saturn-Jupiter conjunction in Taurus, and in May of that year there was five planets in Taurus. For everything toxic, let's think there's a tonic version. So kind of positive sleeper cells, right? So there's a positive sleeper cells. The 60s is that. Those born in the 60s, those who lived through the 60s is kind of like a positive sleeper cell, kind of like, whoa, wait a minute, I was supposed to be doing something. waking up. You know, but so March 24th is that important thing, and even the Park Service said they're expecting 500,000 people in D.C. And then the next day, Sunday, is 60 Minutes, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, is Stormy Daniels interview, right? And the chart for that is fun because it's one plus Cancer midheaven, which is a sailor lowers an old flag and raises a new one. We go, let's raise a giant bra. There we go. Okay. And wouldn't it be witty if it was Stormy Daniels and the Vixen team of, you know, quirky forms of Venus arising that, you know, brought down the Trumpelstiltskins. So rather than the kind of Mueller boys team, you know, or everything. But it also, you know, something I love too much, but the idea of toasting. I mean, we're at a banquet, so toasting. And I used this at the NCGR conference last January, but it's too wonderful. So a friend of mine was in Soviet Georgia, and she, when it was that, and she walked into a local smoky bar, you know, and there was a silence when she walked in, and then the man, who was sort of the kind of leader, looked at her, and he said, you know, I drink to your death. And a hush fell on the room, and he said, and may you be buried in a casket made of 100-year-old oak of which I plant the seed today. Right? It's really great. It's a prospodokian. It's a term. It means something at the end really changes the whole thing. So we want the whole nature of reality right now to be a prospodokian going, just kidding, you know. But the most famous one, which is not one we necessarily want to emulate, but the most famous one on the internet is, I want to die peacefully in my sleep like my grandfather, not yelling and screaming like the passengers in his car. Right? So, you know. Which is, it's really good because at first you think it's like a saccharine Hallmark card, and then it's a very different picture, right? So there's that. But the death one, the death one is really good. Now, part of why I love Stormy Daniels is I follow her on Twitter and Instagram. I have not seen her oeuvre, but on Twitter she's a genius. It's something we're going to bring up in a coyote way. She's a genius at spiraling out of polarizing hatred. People are like, you know, and she's witty and charming and never faces off. She's a spiraling genius. And then also, she is a very serious horsewoman, and in fact, really a horsewoman. On Instagram, there's a picture of her that is one of the most beautiful pictures I've ever seen of human and animal. She and her horse are really one, and they're leaping. She does steeplechase. They're leaping over this huge thing, but it's exquisite. And there's this great quote I found rummaging around in piles, because Jupiter retrograde and Scorpio is we're just excavating all the hidden treasures around us, going, oh, wait a minute, I wrote a book and I forgot about it. There, okay. Oh my God! And there's a, you know, an important pile that was important in 2007. Oh my God! Okay, but I found this little scrap of paper that I liked, and it's a quote from somewhere from Augustus W. Hare. He said, "Half the failures of this world arise from pulling in one's horse as he is leaping," right? Which is pretty good. It's nicely phrased, you know, not all, half of the failures, right? But we can all feel that, right? Where the wave came and we were like, oh no. You know, or the opportunity, the Jupiterian opportunity, and we, you know, no, not quite ready. And we go, well, all right, team, if not now, when? I mean, this is it. Again, it's the with the one's horse vehicle. It's interesting also, you know, Stormy Daniels, Pisces, Elizabeth Taylor, Pisces, strong connection to horses, this mythic horse theme. So we say, you know, a toast, really. We can toast with whatever you had to all liberating vixens. You know, all liberating vixens not snookered into polarity, right? There we go. All liberating vixens, right? And Kathy Griffin's making a comeback. There we go. Okay. right. So to liberating vixens, that's good. Because I don't know if you know the sequence of the joke, like, you know, what's the difference between Rush Limbaugh and the Hindenburg? One's a flaming Nazi gas bag, and the other's just a dirigible. so we'd say that, you know, what's the difference between, you know, Stormy Daniels and the woman who's being nominated, the prison queen, or the torture queen is being nominated to head the CIA. We go, what's the difference between them? And when we go, one is one of the lowest form of pornographic cruelty in the world, and the other is Stormy Daniels. So Venus is back in myriad forms, right, in many forms. You know, she arose from the underworld in Pisces, but I only got to see her, because it's like, when do you see Venus? You know, from the plane last night, and I'm like, plane, we're an hour, five and a half, and there's Venus, I finally saw Venus, it was so beautiful. So she arose in Pisces, the sign of her exaltation, with Mercury, you know, she's back. You know, and as many people know from the Inanna myth, that, you know, the Inanna myth is the Venus astronomical cycle. And one of the things I'll be talking about on Sunday is, you know, that cultures stash their scientific knowledge symbolically embedded in myths and fairy tales. So the Inanna myth is good that way. There's a fantastic essay by William Irwin Thompson on the fairy tale Rapunzel. How many of you know fairy tale Rapunzel? Pretty good, pretty good. Right, so he really does tease from it, you know, the orbital cycle of the Moon, Mars, and Venus, the history of biology, sex, and death on the planet, you know, and all kinds of botanical lore. It's really, it really is in there. We'll come back to that maybe tonight, maybe not. But it's quite wonderful. But think of what happened, you know, when the unsupervised Mars team in the alleged Enlightenment came along going, we don't want these silly myths and fairy tales and symbolic languages like astrology. We want just science, right? So what it did is it stripped science of its kind of moral, mythological, guiding cocoon that knowledge be used in dedication to collective well-being, right? And so it's the re-wedding of what's been falsely separated as a mean trick of the reality police. You know, they want, you know, science and myth and metaphor and astrology, they love each other. They started off together, and they, you know, it's the starting off together, the diaspora, and then now is the confluencing back. So, you know, we also want to honor, you know, just powerful, everybody, but powerful women. There's a memorial being built right now for Berta Cáceres in Honduras, who I met her briefly at the Goldman Awards, where she won a great award for her environmental bravery. You know, and she was so dedicated, again, she, science and mysticism to protect the waters and mama waters, and she was assassinated. But the year after at the Goldman, I saw many of her indigenous colleagues who did this beautiful song chant, and they go, Berta did not die, she multiplied, right? You know, and available to all of us, regardless of our temporary age, race, and gender assignment. You know, and then just on March 14th, you know, an extraordinary woman, Marielle Franco in Brazil, was you know, a lesbian, black, beautiful activist, you know, about police brutality and about protecting the environment, was assassinated on March 14th. But her assassination has made her this huge global thing. Again, she did not die, she multiplied. And with Jupiter, you know, retrograde in Scorpio, again, we're you know, many things, but it's the detective realm of really excavating, you know, deeply. And I love, one of my favorite clients and allies is a woman with Sun at 19 plus Scorpio, the accursed degree of the accursed sign, because its Sabian symbol is a woman draws back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway, and presumably like, oh, that's a bad thing. But so she has the Sun at 19 plus Scorpio and Mercury in Scorpio in the 12th house. And so she is a forensic psychiatrist. She is a culture doctor. And her job is to go into horrific crime scenes and maintain kinship with the perpetrator. You know, and she says, you know, our conversations are great. The 12th house dynamic of, you know, being culture doctor as one expression, you know, that a wise culture would want to know how did this happen, and that it's all part of collective dream, and that in a sense there is no strictly personal crime incident. Pressure comes down, psychic, psychotic, you know, pressures through the thin membrane that separates our uniqueness from the whole collective thing, and it explodes through psychic, psychotic members of our populace. So, you know, she says, well, when she goes to examine crime scenes in which children have killed their mother, and she goes, well, we are killing our mother. It's all a conversational dream. And when she was called into Virginia Tech to that particular shooter, and we got to look at his diaries, and go, if only our team, all of us, were mythologically literate, we could have seen the detective work of what was going on with this Korean guy. Korea, kind of, again, Mongolian shamanism comes in to Korea, topped off with a particularly suppressive, no therapy, no help kind of Christianity. Boom. And so what was happening in his diaries was these, you know, suppressed monsters. You know, we go, ooh. Yeah, and the model, the Plutonian model, is that things are volatile and explosive in direct proportion to the degree of their exclusion. Boom, right? So again, the art of inviting. It's why I go across borders. It's why I went to the Republican convention and the Democratic convention, which was almost tougher in some ways. You know, just to go. Well, yeah. But, well, because I knew what was going to happen. I knew what was going to happen. It was like, oh God, no, we are so sunk because we're being snookered on what should be our strong suit of storytelling. Hillary, but had no story craft. And this important theme of the con man versus the trickster, and we know that Trumpelstiltskin, I call him that, that made the fairy tale fate. You know, do you remember what happened to Rumpelstiltskin? He got so in peak because his name was guessed that he stamped his foot on the floor and plunged into the underworld to be redeemed in some future Buddhist cosmology. So, but forensic psychiatry, I think, is part of that dynamic, that a wise culture would want to go, why and how is this part of our collective dynamic? And what's brewing now? And I do find, you know, the part of this beautiful, exquisite language to which we're all dedicated is it's an exquisite language of our interior psyche and the democracy of our interior psyche. That's kind of how I do readings, you know, and its relationship to the whole, its separation by a thin membrane, its relationship to the whole vast pulsing cosmos. You know, so there's some things we can note, you know, about the shootings and the shooters. A humongous amount of screen time. You know, the Las Vegas shooter was on screen on video poker, you know, 16 hours a day. And often a pharmaceutical mix, video games, there's a number of other factors, but it leads to volatile alienation and the desire to be a hero in some quirky way. And I was doing a reading for a wonderful woman who works with young kids, immigrant kids, Mexican and Vietnamese. And she said they all had different degrees of kind of Asperger spectrum, ADD. And she asked the parents, you know, how much time do your little six-year-old spend on a screen every day? And they were like, oh, 6 hours or so. She was like, we're going to Taurus this. All right, we're going to more time outside. And as they spent more time in nature, the ADD and the Asperger syndrome just started to melt away. She talked about video-induced psychosis. You know, there was a study done in Scandinavia of kids growing up before the age of 8 with no computers, and kids growing up after the, you know, with computers before the age of 8. The kids without computers perceived 500 colors in nature, right? And the kids with computers perceived 100 colors in nature. So a diminution of intimacy with the world, in a sense. And we can extrapolate into taste. You know, people have called Americans gustatory morons, you know, salty and sweet. And we need these different bitternesses in these things. And the same with sound. I work a lot at big, huge festivals and MC a bunch of the stages, like at the 50,000 people at the Eclipse Festival. And they are remarkable things. But the music, much of it wonderful, but all night is this like doom, doom, doom. And it's like, hey man, it's trance music. And I go, no, I think that's obedience music. You know, because it's like doom, doom. We want complexity of rhythm, complexity of taste, complexity of color as part of the crucial antidote. And because part of our dynamic, you know, Saturn, semi-square Jupiter, is, you know, critique and then bless. You know, it's a crucial dynamic of the critique and then the bless. And, you know, American culture has been kind of devoid of blessing. Other cultures really kept it alive in a lot of ways. And so we got, a lot of Americans go, what's a blessing? So just for fun, you know, what would be a blessing for someone plotting cruelty? You know, and see, it doesn't have to be realistic at all. You know, may a bevy of therapeutic golden retrievers roll you around and lick away the scar tissue from the innocent dignity of your child heart, for instance. Because I worked a lot with Robert Bly at his Great Mother Conference, and I was working with Neil Douglas Klotz, interesting Aramaic scholar who works a lot in the Middle East. And everybody at that conference wanted to talk about the problems in the Middle East. There were Palestinian poets, and there were people in the Israeli military, and it was a, and Neil said, I do this, you know, with grown-ups in the Middle East. These people are not ready for that. And I go, well, we got to do that. And I said, but here's our frame. You know, for every critique that everybody brings up, everyone's responsible for a blessing. You know, so people would go, the American people are so stupid, and I go, and your blessing would be, and they're like, and it doesn't have to be realistic. May every time people hear lies, may a bevy of wolves surround them and whisk them out into the woods or whatever. So what happened though is people would bring up things like, ah, you know, and then they would come up with a blessing. And Neil afterwards said that was amazing. He said that was amazing because there was no poison in the room, because everyone was responsible for coming up with the antidote to the poison. This theme again of tonic and toxic. You know, and I was thinking a lot about this in small and ways. Is, you know, I had a student at a class I was just teaching, and you know, who said one of those things like, "Can I talk to you alone?" Which is always like, "Uh oh," you know. And the person was like, "Why don't I have any planets in the fourth house?" I'm like, "Oh God." I can't even come up with a blessing. You know, and I'm still working on the trauma of my father's wife. When was this? Like 10 years ago. 10 years ago. You're like 100,000 years old, for God's sake. But it took up a lot of headspace. So, you know, and I was like, wow. Yeah. But naming the demon was useful. I go, ah, she is possessed by the vampire demon of impositional melancholy, disguised as weakness. So once I named it, I was like, oh, that's good. But that's only part of the journey. I mean, it gave me a kind of liberation. But then we go, well, what do demons want? We go, they want what everybody wants. They want to be liberated, right? So the liberating of the demons, and we find this in fairy tales and myths. Milarepa, the greatest saint in all of Tibetan Buddhism, was a murderer and a highwayman, you know, redemption. And it's why I love having gone to so many groups in the last year, you know, entheogenic groups and therapy groups or whatever. But everybody was talking about their trauma. You know, my trauma, my trauma, my trauma. I go, what is your trauma? And they're like, I forgot. But it's bigger than everybody else's. I know I've got credentials. I've got credentials invested in this trauma. You know, and I go, okay, you know, how about the next time, you know, we're tempted to use the word trauma, we replace it with the phrase, my dangerous, beautiful assignment, right? Which is the Pluto thing. Which really is true, because redemption lies in brewing medicine for others. That's really crucial and true. So we wonder, you know, how shall we get from the horrific and dangerous times that we're in of, you know, the war on life, which is just, you know, apparently just relentless. You know, the worst thing that could possibly happen. You know, we go, oh, yes, you know. And how do our inward dedication magnetizes outward opportunity? We gather in this fabulous place, you know, and we get to have the relief of being with kindred people. You know, again, unlike some parts of our families. But I do like thinking of the fourth house that the person was like, well, I don't know. But I like thinking of us all before birth going, oh, land us in situations where we'll learn everything that needs healing on the planet. And they go, we have a perfect opening for you in Pittsburgh or in whatever, wherever you were born. You know, but I got a little more quirky press recently because Sally Quinn, who's a Washington socialite married to Ben Bradley or whatever, but I've been her astrologer kind of since 1978. So she wrote her memoir, Finding Magic, in which I do play a fairly large role, and she attributes many, many extraordinary things to me, some of which might be true. I'm not sure. But it's given me a whole little... But my sister, who's very rational, is like, oh, my important science husband and I were so worried. You don't really still think there's anything interesting about astrology, do you? And I'm like, oh, Herr Freud, you don't really think there's anything to that dream. Anyway, so we can all relax here. But how shall we get from the horrific So when the Trumpel-Stoltzkin administration was about to be inaugurated, and then the fantastic women's gathering that was such a powerful atmosphere, the memosphere, the atmosphere of that gathering, I don't know how many of you went to women's gatherings at that time, but it was so powerful, and everyone was incredibly well-behaved, and the signs were so smart. You know, migration is older than language, and it's like, yes, it's smart stuff. You know, and the cops were all pleased. You know, again, the memosphere, a term I've kind of coined for group mind, you know, the memosphere was fantastic. And the memosphere is the realm of most efficient influence for the trickster within us all. You know, Dion Fortune said, the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance, right? And that's what we can kind of do in our gathering. But I did ask the I Ching before the inauguration, going, oh, I Ching, do you have an image for this administration? And it did. It said the darkest form of black magic was engaged when an emperor would put 5 venomous creatures in a jar until one of them killed and ate the others. And I go, that's perfect. God. thank you. So Stella Coyote and I, you know, I mean, I learned so much from her about, you know, coyote attitude and everything. And coyotes will, you know, hidden cameras in the forest have captured this. Coyotes will follow along behind trappers laying traps, you know, and the coyotes will follow along behind. They spring the traps with sticks because they're smart and it's a public service. And then they pee all over it just for attitudinal flourish, right? And I think that's a good part of our Jupiter Scorpio, our expanding underworld skills, which are very important. Going, you see them, you spring the trap, and you pee all over it. Is really, and other crucial things. And also something I want to keep weave through everything, you know, and my presentations this weekend. But what we really connected. Trickster spirituality, like voodoo and like New Orleans, it's a wheel and deal thing. And I carry with me, you know, two things always. One is a Lakota elder years ago I hosted on the radio when Stella just arrived in my life. And he's like, coyote is nothing smarter in nature, you know. And he said, you know, we Lakota did not hunt alone. Those gifted at trance and reverie, hello Neptune, would go into a mild trance and they would negotiate a working treaty, an alliance with the wolves and coyotes, and we would all hunt together for a season. Right? So pragmatic mysticism, trance in order to backstage negotiate. You know, it would be like the part of us that may have a mythological memory of this, you know, emerging going, well, it wasn't easy, but we got a deal. You know, the coyotes want the front left leg and half the liver of every other deer, and the wolves are cool with that, and the deer are cool with that. Everybody back on stage. On stage and backstage. And then the Lakota said, you know, if you want to destroy a culture, destroy its capacity to cooperate in this way across species borders, and then you can and even shame people out of it, right? And then a friend of mine who's disguised as a psychologist, you know, and also an archaeologist, she of the fun bon mots, in which she said, what if the idea of matriarchy is a patriarchal concept? And it's like, well, that's fun. Well, yeah. As she said, as opposed to actual equality, you know, and we go, right. And she, knowing Malta and everything, says a lot of it, you know, is misnamed. But actual equality, because things are so whacked out, you know, would look like a matriarchy coming into balance. But she said the modern concept of worship is, you know, in a mainstream way, has become so silly. You are great, you know, I'm nothing, now give me this thing. And she said, in hunter-gatherer society and throughout the Mediterranean, there was great reverence and respect between the incarnationally sensual Taurus realms and the backstage Scorpio eighth house realms. And she said, but it was a much more collaborative relationship, that the divine backstage seeks incarnational invitation as much as we seek communion with it. I go, I love this. And as long as we have a hierarchical spirituality, we're going to get, you know, Donald Trump. And so this idea of democratic animism, you know, and which is what I'm really viewing Uranus and Taurus, the, you know, liberating Taurus back to this animism dynamic. So Stella Coyote and I came up with a creation myth, a bodhisattva creation myth, which we bring alive, you know, now. And so it's long before there were humans, there was Trickster, who sets the whole shebang going with a sizzle of lightning. And this unique spirit of nature's evolutionary adaptive ingenuity, experimental ingenuity, try that, nope, try that, nope, try that, yes, okay, there we go. You know, goes through all the flora and fauna, and we see it in coyotes and ravens and seeds that sprout after cataclysm, and you know, it's that it likes against all odds. And every now and then it gets orthodoxed, priested, branded, you know, imprisoned, inquisitioned, right? But it's ingenious and it learns how to escape. So it's an escapade artist. And that sizzle, you know, moves into each one of our hearts now, you know, and this is really kind of the way to go, this sizzling. It's the antidote to the dark conspiracy to make humans stupid, which is, you know, strong. And so I think Jupiter retrograde, I like retrograde, you know, everything speaking to us in this beautiful language that we love so much is, you know, it cultivates qualities of, you know, it's a school. It cultivates storytelling, that we live in a storytelling creation, that everything is speaking to us all the time by its shape and its color and its song and its rhythm. You know, and if we humans were to approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, we'd be back in the choreography of creation. You know, we'd be back in kinship again. You know, that really wants to happen. And there's a number of, you know, places we might want to, Jupiter retrograde, retrieve, revisit. So I like thinking of retrograde planets as, you know, their apparent motion backwards, as going on a vision quest to remember what they were for, to kind of decondition. And so Jupiter retrograde says, well, there's some things we might want to explore. I was intrigued, a good Jupiter Scorpio term, by a guest on radio show saying, you know, 4,000 years ago, the Greeks got rid of most of their animal gods and replaced them with human gods. And I go, huh, that might be an interesting place to revisit. You know, and it might be, you know, all the myths are speaking to us. It's like the Mabinogion, the Welsh creation myths, Arthurian legends, collected. Well, they're collected in the 10th century, but much older. And there's a moment in the Mabinogion where the elders get together and go, uh-oh, the men just found out they have something to do with children, and things were going so well before this. And we can see what's going to happen. And, you know, women, children will become property. You know, and humans will lose kinship not only with each other, but with the earth herself and with nature until the earth might die. And then at that point, some people will keep all the value of their individual humanist thing, you know, individual journey, but at the same time, you know, come back into collective woofiness, right? Participation. Go, all right. And it may be, you know, it's interesting because I did just get back from teaching in India, and before going, I had all my old books that I'd read, you know, and piled by my bed, the Upanishads and everything, going, I will read all of these before I go. Nope, I will flip through them the night before I leave. Okay, there we go. So the Upanishads is great. I mean, it's very humans rah-rah, but it is exquisite, you know, and it's a wonderful, again, this syncretism that Emerson and Thoreau and the American Transcendentalists read the Upanishads, and Gandhi read Emerson and Thoreau, which is how we found out about the Upanishads, right? So we love that part. But it is, you know, as I was, you know, not paying enough homage, just rifling through, going, it's brilliant, it's exquisite, it's humans rah-rah, humans as the highest pinnacle of creation. And I'm just not there anymore. You know, I go, humans are not my favorite species. I've lived with a coyote longer than I've lived with a human. So just the idea of revisiting, like, well, what happened, you know, and to keep, you know, the hubris of humanism, in a sense. I like throwing the hubris of humanism into the cauldron and ladling out the truth of animism. And there are many truths and many stories. And, you know, Jupiter always reminds us there can be 20, 30 stories going on all at once, and they can even all be true and conflicting. Which ones are we going to vote for? And part of the rotational dynamic of this beautiful language is, you know, many stories, many truths, many stories, many truths, and then they get, you know, illumined, or they rise to be important. So, you know, to look at them. I did like, you know, the dark conspiracy to make humans stupid. So snookered, bamboozled. There was a neurological study that just came out that said, you know, part of the extreme right-wing evangelical brain is, they said, functional impairment in the prefrontal cortex, which has diminished cognitive flexibility, curiosity, creativity, and open-mindedness. But you know what's the antidote for that? drugs, magic mushrooms, actually. The study on psilocybe mushrooms and microdosing is all very interesting. But traditional lore, but also Johns Hopkins studies, have said that psilocybe mushrooms from the underworld, right, the mycelia, because we might want to revisit when we as humans made the underworld a bad place, right? Because it's soil and mycelia and everything. When did that happen? Because different scholars, Carl Rook is a scholar of the Eleusinian Mysteries, and when I hosted him a long time ago, he said, there are many ways to tell the story of Pluto and Persephone, Proserpina, first serpent woman, and see, the rape and kidnapping is way late. And he said in one of the original versions told by Plato, the Pluto character is called Pharmacia. It's not a guy, it's medicine plants that take us to a deep underworld of initiation, where we shed our little puella and puer costume and emerge initiated, right? But not as humans rah-rah, but as humans in kinship with plants. And the Johns Hopkins studies now, kind of proving lore, say that apparently psilocybe mushrooms, they calm down the amygdala portion of the brain, which is the highly reactive fear thing, the thing most easily snookered, right? Most easily kidnapped in some way. So it calms that down and increases cooperation among the other brain regions and increases confidence and kindness, right? And Paul Stamets, who was giving this lecture, said confidence and kindness, those are good leadership qualities too, right? So a little metaphoric psilocybe toast. There you go. There's a little micro dose of psilocybe in your imaginary cocktail. There we go. So confidence and kindness. Hooray. So the entheogens. I like saying entheo endogenous indigenuity. Because entheo is kinship. Endogenous is this wonderful word. It means we have endogenous receptors for cannabis and endogenous receptors for DMT, one of the working principles in ayahuasca. We have these little receptors. It was also like, Rick, when you were talking about Uranus and Taurus and lightning, there's got to be an endogenous receptor in the ground, right? The lightning strikes when there's an upwelling from the ground. It's a two-part kind of a thing. So endogenous means intrinsic. And I think part of the beauty of the language that we love is we have endogenous receptors to myth and astrology. And so when we speak it, little parts of us, and that's part of the value of doing readings for ourselves and others, the endogenous receptors in our psyches go, yes, yes. And it's a crucial strategy also. Whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves. Which is why we don't want to judge somebody. We want to discern. We want high standards. But when we judge somebody, which is a kind of prison, we're inviting the least evolved part of them to dance with the least evolved part of us, and it's just never a pretty thing, But this language of astrology gives us a lot of strategy. Everyone, even at bleakest, I will walk down the street going, everybody's got a Neptune, a dreamer, everybody's got a hero, so everybody's got a trickster in there somewhere, speak to that. And that was why I tested this out, at CPAC and also at the Republican Convention. The Democrats were less playful. I mean, that's a truth we wouldn't like to know. But, it's also having done, little bits of media, in different cycles of like a lot and then, whatever. But the deep conservatives like Pat Buchanan, toxic, it's said about him, if he weren't Irish, he'd hate them too. But the confidence of the conservative educated is interested in Jesuit, interested in engaging in a philosophical conversation. The liberals, so worried that people at Harvard would sneer at them, were more suppressive about actual interesting conversation. But I like us moving our emotional default setting to woof woof, want to play, right? And if somebody doesn't want to play, we don't get harumphy, because otherwise it wasn't really an offering. So at the Republican Convention, woof woof, want to play, and people were like, darling, love your hair, right? And the Democrats really not so much, but it's a quirky thing. We would like to not be true, but anyway. But there was There was a right-wing Alabama evangelical Trump delegate minister, right? A little flirty, but I said, no, never mind that. Would you like to play a game? He's like, I love games. And I said, okay, I have a bunch of quotes, and some are from Trump, and some are from ISIS, misnamed ISIS, and you tell me which is which. He's like, oh boy. Right, so I gave him this quote, you know, we must destroy the world in order to save the thing. He goes, that's Trump. And I go, nope, that's ISIS. And he goes, ha, got me. And anyway, so, you know, and then there was another guy who was like, oh, no regulations, you know, which is Saturn, no whatever, because I want to play the games that I want to play. And I go, well, that's interesting, because the essence of games actually is rules. And he's like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. And I go, you know, in fact, on this planet, there are some limits, Saturn limits here. There's only so much water, the water of Cleopatra. There's only that's it. And he goes, oh, I guess I better think my, what did you call it, metaphor. I'm like, yes, you go do that. Right. So, you know, woof, woof, want to play, there we go. And I mean, I've got a million of those stories. But I think part of it also is to track everything back to its originating impulse before it got bamboozled. And that includes people and everything. What did this want to be before it got snookered and bamboozled and hoodwinked? What did this want to be? You know, because as Ursula Gwynne, now an ancestor, said, we strengthen whatever we oppose, right? So which is why spiraling in nature, when conflicting forces come together, spirals, right? Whether it's galaxies or hair patterns or, you know, hot smoke and cool evening air, or cold coffee, cold cream and hot coffee, spirals. It's nature's way of resolving conflict. And when I was asking a mythological meteorologist, what do hurricanes want? And he said, they want what we all want. They want peace. They're trying to move conflicting forces to the North Pole, right? And so the enormity of storms, which will be getting bigger, is speaking to us about the enormity of imbalance that we have, that nature is trying to resolve in this spiraling form. So so I think adopting our strategies from nature is crucial to spiral. You know, it's the Aikido thing, it's the Sufi thing. So it's like a wonderful learned ally, John Michael Greer, who's a great learned druid. He says, if you want to get nothing done but heat and conflict, convince people they're on one side of something. You know, you will only get heat. All right. What two needs is three. Here comes Jupiter, which is the unifying story. We're all in this. You know, and it behooves us to be story magnetizers. Excuse me. Come on over from the thing that's going down to the thing that's coming up. You know, as Alan Watts says, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you, right? So it's like, come on over here. You know, a really invaluable book is called Finite and Infinite Games. It's kind of an older book by James Carse. But even just on the cover, it says, a finite game's about winning, right, and infinite game's about keeping everything in play. So a renaissance, he says, was not primarily against. It was not defined as against. It was an irresistible, magnetizing invitation to the best, sane, reverent part of people. Come on over here. We're doing this. So we critique, absolutely. You know, we all have a magic mirror. So the secular critic part of us, which is necessary, holds up a mirror and goes, you know, look, it sucks in detail. And then the trickster, with a wave of the hand, turns the mirror into a window, but look how beautiful it could be. Vision, vision. And then with another sweep of the hand, turns it into a door. Let's go there. So, you know, examples. We want to be first responders as opposed to first reactors, right? We have a lot of first reactors. To react to anything is not free, right? To cultivate an ever-expanding repertoire of responses is to align ourselves with nature's guiding genius. So a friend of mine, Corey, was substitute teaching in Oakland at a pretty rough neighborhood. And he was taking attendance, and there was a big guy in the back of the class who wouldn't give his name. And Corey said, hey man, if you don't give me your name, you can't be in my class. And the guy pulled out a gun. Right. And everybody dove under their desk, but Corey just stayed there and said, hey man, I'm flattered. I'm flattered you want to be in the class that much. Right? And it just cracked the guy up. They became buddies. The guy became his bodyguard. You know. But I just thought, hey man, I'm flattered. Right? See, all it takes is to one person to break out of the expected thing to change the whole dance. You know, this is a crucial thing, you know, and in working with clients and stuff, just example, you know, had a dentist client who was raising his teenage hooligan sons, and they had this pattern. He would come back and the house would be trashed, beer cans and pizza, and he'd fly into a rage. And I said, okay, you can't fake this, right? But if you can do something unexpected, experiment. Because remember, Uranus is nature's evolutionary experimental intelligence. It has no category about success, fail. Other parts of the psyche and the world do, but it's like, try that, try that, try that, try that, no, try that, you know. You know, well, humans think, you know, nature says, well, humans think I'm silly if I put big ears on this mammal. It's like, no, let's try it and see if the little critter lasts for a couple of million years. So I said this to the dentist. I go, you can't fake it. It's got to be authentic. But, you know, see if you can do a disruptive, unsurprising thing. And he called and he said, well, that was really interesting. He said, I came back. The house was trashed like it always was. And I just looked around calmly and said, I'm going to the movies. And he said, I got back from the movies and the house was like spotless. They were really freaked out. It's like, no, we do this and you fly into a rage. But, you know, so unexpectedness liberates everybody into a better story, right? And everything in the beautiful sky Earth story now is kind of contained between Jupiter and Scorpio, you know, crescent, 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 to Uranus and Aries, the two Mars realms, right? And that idea of, you know, onstage and backstage. But and this is also really crucial in fairy tales. Let's see, how am I doing on time here? Let me just, oh, we're okay.
Five minutes?
Holy moly. All right, never mind about ageless wisdom. Come to my other lectures, okay. All right, okay. But I would pitch it to us since I'm dancing with Pluto, you know, and having a pretty good time. Is you know, how about us humans, you know, if we were willing experimentally, just for the hell of it, to give up addiction to having an enemy, you know, going, that would be fun, you know, let's throw that into Pluto's cauldron, the polarity, it, you know, again in the Aikido sense. So we do know that Jupiter stationing at 23 plus Scorpio, which is a person giving a sermon on a mount. Come to my other lectures to hear about that. But I love that it's retrograding back to Jupiter at 13 plus Scorpio on July 11th. One of my favorite degrees, that's Edward Snowden's moon, right? Because we have his birth time. And the image for that, first think Edward Snowden, then think us. The image for Edward Snowden's moon and us, 13 plus Scorpio, is telephone linemen installing links to other realities. the cosmic switchboard. And we go, that's great. So Jupiter will retrograde back to trine Neptune. We go, ooh, you know, stories, myth, you know. The protoplasm of reality is especially receptive to imaginative imprint, right? You know, cooperators are standing by. Against all odds is this part of us. You know, and so Uranus in Taurus, you know, will enter on May 15th, which is a new moon in Taurus. And there's, you know, a million ways, and well, all of us are custodians of different stories, but that's the nature of a renaissance. Who brought what? You know, who brought what? So we love that. And so the Jupiter-Neptune also says, you know, like the Lakota Sioux, it's like to form alliances across species borders by our affinity, that our whole lives are spiritual detective novels. And every quirky affinity or clue is worthy of honoring. You know, and so to protect water, become more like water. To protect wolves, become more like wolves. All of those things. You know, and I love, you know, Jupiter and Scorpio, trine Neptune. Compassion with sizzle, right? Meaning fully informed. Not like, la, 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 everything's lovely, because it's not, you know. But fully informed, as Wendell Berry says, be jaunty, even though you have all the facts. Right, it might be 6 minutes, but I'll keep it pretty tight. Okay, a woman whose work I love that's vastly influential, and I think it is kin with all of us, is the work of Janine Benyus and the whole realm of biomimicry. And, you know, search biomimicry online, it's fabulous. Her point, she's created green chemistry, non-toxic chemistry, but her deal, and I view this as very Uranus and Taurus Renaissance, the return of animism, and humans humble. The word human comes from humus, dirt, from which we get the word humble. We're meant to be, you know, humble in the dirt. So Janine says, rather than looting nature, why don't we borrow nature's recipes, right? Because human technology is poisonous and nature can't afford to do that. And just on a simple level, the Japanese bullet train, now high-speed bullet train, was its flaw was when it emerged from tunnels, it made a huge sonic boom. And so they consult with Janine Benyus. And also a website for everyone that is invaluable is called asknature.org. It was started by E.O. Wilson, great Harvard scientist, and Janine. And it comes up with a question box, and you can type in any question, and it will tell you how nature solves that. So Janine said, well, it's an interesting issue of something leaving a tight place into a large place or changing elements. You know, what in nature does that? And she goes, oh, the kingfisher bird, it enters water without a splash, right? Just poof, you know, with this beautiful, incredible design. So they redesigned the Japanese bullet train to be like a kingfisher, right? And so it emerged from the tunnel completely silent. Whoosh, right? And there's just a million of these things, which again, we fill our magic backpack with. Did you know? Did you know about these incredible, elegant solutions that we are so wealthy with? You know, and it's the whole realm. Sir Herbert Reed said, only those serving an apprenticeship to nature can be trusted with technology. I really like that. The last time I hosted her on the radio, I said, what is this scientific term, vertical integrated hierarchy? And she said, oh, it's this beautiful thing in nature that says everything in nature contains the plan of the larger thing it's a part of. And she said, for instance, a tendon in our arm is made of twisted bundled sticks, and each one of those is twisted bundled sticks, and each one of those is twisted bundled sticks. Micro, 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 virgo, 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 you know, fractal, fractal, fractal. And she says, this is what makes for nature's ingenuity, resilience, and self-assembling, right? So she's very happy as a strict science, beautiful person, for me to take all of her scientific fact and turn it into metaphoric guidance. So it says, as we gather here and clarify our dedication, right, it strengthens, the inward dedication strengthens our outward signal. So we're more likely to be danced into place, you know, to the larger thing that we're all a part of. We go, ah, you know, so, you know, a blessing to our rogue species of entheo-endogenous indigenuity, and cutting right to the chase. Okay. Come to my other lectures, okay. Whatever, okay. Life is a blah, 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 okay. We've done that, okay. Never mind that, okay. Manners, humans having manners would be... Okay, one just fun little ditty. These things that are corny, but again, you know, in working with people and applying it to myself, you know, Saturn, semi-square Jupiter, just even changing got to get to, right? Because see, I've got to is outsource Saturn, immediate procrastination resistance. I've got to do this thing. I get to do this thing, you know, is really much more fun. We get to redesign human society in a way that's no longer warmongering, but an ingenious, compassionate response. Oh boy, how fun, you know. Because see, I my vision of Neptune and Pisces is the backstage, you know, the flora and fauna, all the creatures on the planet meet backstage and go, what are we going to do about the humans? We've got to either kill them or heal them. Let's try both. We'll try healing them first. Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship available for fresh vernacular expression. Every piece of beautiful astrology or metaphysics or metaphor or poetry or music, you know, let's do that. You know, so there. All right, so I think we'll a toast, perhaps. So a toast, we'll hold up our cup of poisoned wine, poison rises at the top, we blow it off, we quaff the drink. Excellent. We go, may our rogue species have manners again. That would be fantastic. And then this wonderful, two last little short things. There's a wonderful Eritrean word, Aizan. And Aizan is a blessing bestowed on people who are getting ready to go on a dangerous, worthy journey. It's all support and love on your dangerous, beautiful journey. So we might toast each other and go, Aizan, Aizan. And then just to let, you know, Stella Coyote and the ancestors and the animals and the floras, you know, if you feel like it, you know, because, you know, autonomy is a sacrament. But just a kind of like, yip, yip, awoo. Thank you, team. Thank you. Oh.